I leave it to you to let her know what she needs. It was hardly the most logical system, but the Highborn were not very trusting, and at the moment, Malfurion could not entirely blame them. I will speak to her as soon as I can, he promised Fardon. The mage did not answer, his gaze once again distant. The edge of his mouth twitched. Malfurion grew disturbed. Fardon, I swear that Therabrin's death will be investigated thoroughly, and the assassins brought to justice. I only ask that the Highborn have some patience. We cannot afford patience, Archdruid, Vardon blurted. He finally looked directly at Malfurion again, and in those eyes the Archdruid read a sense of dread. You see, I did not come to speak with you about Therabrin. Another of my people has gone missing. Chapter 12. The Horde Strikes. There was still no word from Darnassus, although Haldrissa hoped for it soon. Nevertheless, she went on with her own plans to organize against this latest Horde incursion. Of necessity, that meant a swift, simple ceremony for poor Xanon. The commander said appropriate words for her dead officer, then turned over the final moments to Caradon, one of the two druids assigned to her here in Ashenvale, as part of some project of the High Priestess and the Archdruids to bring the Night Elf race closer together. The other, Parsis, was somewhere in the forest behind them, wandering the Emerald Dream or something. Haldrissa was not quite sure. She was as devoted to the ways of her people as most Night Elves, but the druids were a lot that sometimes baffled and frustrated her. They often seemed to be half asleep, or more, even, and spoke about aspects of the world that had no practical use for a soldier. As soon as the funeral finished, Haldrissa headed back. Danaea followed close. Although her second obeyed every order she gave without question, Haldrissa could sense a distance growing between them. She was certain that Danaea and some of the other officers blamed their commander for not only Xanon's death, but the other losses as well. Of course, most of her officers had not been out in the field as long as Haldrissa, so for the moment she forgave their naivete. If they survived life half as long as she had, they would learn. But will they get that opportunity? She suddenly asked herself. This latest intrusion by the Horde looked to be on a far greater scale than in the past. Danaea.
Yes, Commander.
I want four scouts to take their hippogriffs toward the northeast. Not so far as we journeyed. From the air they should be able to see enough even then.
Yes, Commander.
Oh, and how soon will the full-mounted contingent be ready?
We can ride first thing tomorrow.
Although Danaea tried to maintain a steadiness in her voice, a hint of anticipation crept into it. Haldrissa made certain that her own voice remained calm and in command. If the scouts return with their report by then, we shall. We do not move until then.
With your permission, then, I will go get the scouts.
Haldrissa's nod was all Danaea needed. She rushed off, obviously determined to see to it that the sentinels did indeed ride off the next day.
I remember being so eager once, the senior officer thought, then immediately cursed herself for such maudlin notions.
The only difference between Danaea and her was that Haldrissa had the millennia of experience to know how to temper eagerness with caution. A commander's trait. A low rumble stirred her. From the west trundled in a short train of supply wagons, guided by an armed sentinel escort. The captain in charge of the escort anxiously peered around. Not a good sign at all. Haldrissa immediately headed to her. The captain saluted.
Commander Haldrissa.
Yes.
Did something happen?
She surveyed the wagons, but saw nothing out of the ordinary. Nothing, that is, save that the last wagon had an extra burden draped out of the back. A large winged form. The stench of decay, so familiar to the veteran officer, was strong even before Haldrissa reached the wagon. "We found the hippogriff about a day out," the captain reported as she dismounted. "Been dead for some time." Wordlessly, Haldrissa rushed to the huge corpse. She wanted to deny it for what and who it was, but as she neared, the distinctive markings verified the worst. It was definitely Windstorm. And that meant only the worst where Aradria and the message for Darnassus were concerned. He had many wounds, mostly from arrows, but a great axe is what finally did him in, the captain concluded. Haldrissa peered into the wagon. Windstorm's corpse was set against a number of barrels. Of Aradria Cloudflyer there was no sign. The courier. Where is she? We found only the hippogriff, not her, though there were traces of blood elsewhere that could have been from the courier. We did discover several dead orcs. Never mind the orcs! What of the courier? Cowed by Haldrissa's fury, the young officer blurted. As I said, she was nowhere to be found, but... Nowhere to be found. The commander took heart from that. She saw the scene playing out. Windstorm, sorely wounded in the sky, had no doubt brought his rider to the ground so that she could escape on foot with the pouch, while he sacrificed himself to keep the orc scouts at bay. That the orcs had penetrated so very deep bothered her, but Aradria's escape made up for that. There were places en route where an expert courier such as Aradria could gain another mount. The captain had been saying something, but Haldrissa had not been paying attention. What was that? I said that we also found this there. Haldrissa herself could not see it, but her expression must have been terrible to see, for the captain suddenly gaped at her. The tattered pouches gave testament to the folly of the commander's earlier hopes. Aradria had not gotten away. She would have never abandoned the missive. Either the orcs had disposed of her body or some beast had dragged it away. And Darnassus still had no idea what was happening in Ashenvale. Danaea. Abandoning the confused captain, Haldrissa hurried after her second. Danaea already had scouts preparing for the mission. However, rather than sending them ahead as originally planned, this time she would have all of them wait until she had had 4 more copies of the previous message written. Then the scouts would head to Darnassus. Danaea would just have to bridle her eagerness to hunt down the orcs for another day or so. Matters could wait that long at least, so Haldrissa believed. Danaea! She shouted. Her second stood with the 4 scouts, evidently just about to send them off. Danaea! Her voice did not carry enough. Eager to march off herself, the younger officer signaled permission for the 4 scouts and their hippogriffs to depart. The group quickly rose into the air. Danaea finally turned in response to Haldrissa's shouting. Commander? Signal them to return. Aradria never made it. I want all 4 of them to head to Darnassus instead. She had considered using owls to carry the messages. However, not only were the hippogriffs much faster, but the riders could also defend the missives. The other sentinel rushed to one of the signal horns set aside for summoning the warriors to action. It was their only hope of recalling the hippogriff riders in time. Danaea put the curved horn to her mouth and blew as hard as she could. The blare caused every sentinel to pause in what she or he was doing. Too late, Haldrissa realized that many of them, already preparing for the deadly march, might think the call to action had come sooner than expected. But if the horn stirred the post for the wrong reasons, at least she saw that it served its other purpose. The lead scout glanced over her shoulder, saw Danaea gesturing, and had the party turn about. Praise alone. Haldrissa moved forward to meet the descending hippogriffs. She had a few instructions to pass on to the scouts before hurrying to write out the new messages to Darnassus. A cry above made her stumble. Near her, Danaea let loose with an oath. One of the scouts dropped limply from her mount, plunging to the ground as the other night elves stared in horror. the fletchings of two arrows thrust up over her back as she landed. Haldrissa had fought too many battles not to recognize the horde markings. The sky was suddenly filled with arrows. At first, the commander thought that the archers had miscalculated the distance, for the bolts flew too high to properly descend upon the sentinels below. Only when one of the other scouts and her mount were struck several times did Haldrissa see the terrible logic. It was not the encampment that was the immediate target. It was the scouts. The horde was already prepared for her plan. As the arrows brought down the second scout, other shouts arose ahead. Haldrissa saw several warriors pointing to the east. Smoke rose from two other locations. She did not have to guess its origins. Two of the outposts lay in those directions. "Sentinels, form ranks!" Danaya cried out. "Prepare for imminent attack!" As sentinels, including blue-armored huntresses with shields and glaives, raced to obey, Haldrissa stirred in frustration. Those were orders she should have given. She eyed the forest beyond, wondering how the horde had gotten so near in such numbers. They had clearly made several forays into the area to have such an excellent understanding of their surroundings. But she also knew the terrain well. "Danaya! 20 to the southeast edge of the post. They will have to come from there. I want a mounted force of huntresses with shields and lances readied." With the horde presence in Ashenvale having grown over the past months, General Chandris had decided to include lancers, a seldom-utilized aspect of the Night Elf armies since the end of the War of the Ancients, in the Sentinel's arsenal of weapons. "Get the other!" A hippogriff's squawk cut her off. Another of the winged creatures dropped. Her rider, a shaft through her arm, managed to jump off before the creature hit. The last of the scouts managed to land. However, even the ground proved no sanctuary. More arrows flew, these designed to target those within the encampment and, Haldrissa saw, especially the area where the hippogriffs were kept. Worse, the landing scouts had given the archers a fairly good notion of just where that was. Someone among the attackers had planned very, very well. "Get the hippogriffs to cover!" Haldrissa ordered. She drew her glaive. There was still no sign of the invaders themselves, but that would surely change in moments. Haldrissa had to use what little time remained to her advantage. Her gaze fell upon Kerridan, who ran from wounded fighter to wounded fighter, using his druidic powers to heal them as best he could. The commander chose to leave Kerridan to his own devices for the moment, as additional concerns occurred to her. "Archers, form ranks!" She saw that some had already begun to, but as a whole they were not moving as quickly as Haldrissa would have hoped. "Northeast, east, southeast, 20 paces from the gate!" Of necessity, the main post was surrounded by high wooden walls. When it was being built, the trees sacrificed had been honored as if they were fellow warriors. Haldrissa now prayed that the trees had retained their great prowess even in death. She suspected that the sentinels would need it. Guards on the wall crouched low as they surveyed the forest beyond. Thus far, they had given no sign of sighting the enemy, although a few moved about as if momentarily believing that they had. The deadly whistle of another rain of arrows filled Haldrissa's ears. Danaya shouted a warning to the gathering huntresses to quickly raise the shields. Arrows clattered against the shields. Unfortunately, some of the huntresses did not move fast enough. Screams rose as at least three of them fell with shafts sticking in them, and others struggled with wounds. Haldrissa looked for her own archers and was grateful to see them ready to return fire. Arrows knocked. The archers awaited the word. The commander gave it to them without hesitation. Now the whistling became a sign of hope as night elven arrows soared out over the wall. Haldrissa raced toward it, aware that she would not be there in time to see the bolts descend, but hopeful that there would be evidence of their success. She heard cries from without as she climbed. More than a few. The orcs might have good archers among them, but they were not sentinels. Haldrissa was certain that her people would inflict far more damage.
She only hoped that it would be enough. As if in answer to her question, another stream of arrows returned just as the commander reached the top. Although she managed to duck, the sentinel nearest to her was too slow with the shield she carried. The thick arrow completely piercing her throat, the dead night elf toppled back off the wall. Haldriss appeared into the forest. For the first time, the horde began stepping from the protection of the trees. They were spread throughout the edge of the forest in various positions, and while a few had bows, others seemed intent on merely watching. No, not watching. Counting. Counting the return fire and the number of sentinels on the walls. Squatting down again, Haldrissa turned back to those farther inside. Cease fire! Cease fire! Below, Danaea looked as if her superior had gone mad. She hesitated long enough for another rush of arrows to answer those from the horde. Haldrissa silently cursed as the bolts flew over her. The orcs were expert warriors. By now they could make a good estimate on the sentinel's strength in terms of the archers. Sure enough, as she looked outside again, she saw the orcs at the edge begin to creep back. Simultaneously, the forest quieted. No new flight assailed the night elves.
"They have retreated," one younger sentinel naively murmured to a comrade. "They are gone."
"No," the commander replied, startling the pair and others nearby who, in the excitement, had forgotten that she was there. "No, they have only moved back a little for a short time. We remain under attack. The first person to forget that will likely not have to worry about punishment from me. The horde will have already killed her." The warriors grew solemn, and several tightened their grips on their weapons. That was how Haldrissa wanted it. If they remained ready for the worst, they had a far better chance of survival. She quickly descended to Danaea.
"How are the archers?" "A few wounded, 3 dead. Say the word and we will send another greeting to those vermin."
"Never mind that. The hippogriffs. Were they able to get most of them to cover?"
4 are uninjured. 2 more are wounded but able to fly. 2 others have injured wings and cannot be counted. Another is sorely wounded, and I fear he will die."
6 viable hippogriffs. It was better than Haldrissa had hoped, although fewer than she would have liked. "We do not have much time. See if Carradine can do anything for the less injured ones first," Haldrissa ordered. She paused as a dark look passed over Danaea's face.
"What is it?"
"I meant to tell you next.
The druid is dead.
In the last flight of arrows, a good number fell his direction. He was focused on our wounded and failed to protect himself sufficiently. I believe he died quickly, pierced so many times." Haldrissa cursed. "They saw a chance to take out the druid. Where is Parsis?"
"No sign. He may be dead already."
The commander could not waste more time on the subject. The sentinels had survived without druidic assistance for millennia and would do so now.
"We move on, then.
Get every archer ready quickly. The horde will not wait long before beginning their attack in earnest. We do not know how many of the outposts have been hit and how many of those have been overrun already. We need to get word to Darnassus, but this time I want sufficient cover for the hippogriffs and their riders."
"Do they each carry a copy of the message?"
"Damn the message! At this point, all they have to tell General Chandris is that Ashenvale is under full assault. Now go get them ready." Danaea rushed off with a swiftness that the veteran warrior suddenly envied. Haldrissa already felt as if she had fought an entire battle, not merely the opening skirmish. The archers reassembled, though initially they kept in a loose enough arrangement that if the orcs fired at where they had initially stood, there would be few casualties. It bothered Haldrissa to even think of success being measured by trying to have losses kept to a minimum. But that was war. The more of her fighters she saved, the better, even if it meant some others might have to sacrifice themselves. Including her. The hippogriffs were ready just a few minutes later.
In all that time, the orcs had not fired one shot, nor even sounded one horn. Haldrissa worried about that. Whoever was in charge of the attack had something insidious in mind, she was certain. Danaya signaled her. Haldrissa silently motioned for the archers to ready themselves. When they had their bows knocked and aimed, she nodded to the brave scouts and hippogriffs, then to her second. Danaya waved off the party. The great winged creatures flew into the air, their riders bent low. Each animal took a slightly different direction, but all headed toward the west.
Fire!
Haldrissa commanded. The front ranks of the archers let loose. The second held back, though, just as she had ordered. The stream of arrows soared out toward the forest. As that happened, the hippogriffs beat their wings harder. They rose higher and higher. Again, Haldrissa gave the order to fire. The latter ranks shot. All the while, those who had first fired readied their bows once more. There was no return fire yet. Haldrissa almost held her breath, waiting for the horde to try to shoot down the hippogriffs. Yet they did nothing. At last, the winged creatures and their riders were out of bow range. The commander finally breathed a sigh of relief.
"Look there!"
someone cried. Haldrissa looked for the long-awaited flight of horde arrows, but instead a more stunning view awaited her. High above, and closing fast from the east, were nearly a dozen blurry specks that coalesced just enough to reveal reptilian forms with bat-like wings. Red reptilian forms.
"Red dragons,"
Haldrissa at first gasped, before recognizing that these were more bestial in appearance, and more primitive of form.
"No, red proto-dragons."
She had only heard of them in Northrend, but there had been rumors that the Horde had attempted to bring them to other regions. Savage creatures with stouter, toothy muzzles, they raced along the sky with clear intent. Their wings had sharp points to them, and the proto-dragons roared with monstrous eagerness as they closed. Too late. Haldrissa realized that she had played exactly into the Horde's hands. With an attack already underway, they had expected her to try to send another warning to Darnassus. Haldrissa had just sent the riders and their mounts to their doom. The Horde could not have many proto-dragons. These were likely most, if not all. However, these were all they needed. Almost double the number of hippogriffs, the proto-dragons broke off in pairs to pursue the as-yet unsuspecting riders. A horn blared, Danaya seeking to warn the scouts. Yet even though some clearly reacted, it was too late. The proto-dragons and their orc riders had been waiting in hiding so near that it did not take them much time to overtake their quarry. Hippogriffs were hardly defenseless, and those working with the sentinels were especially adept at battle. Unable to gain enough distance on their pursuers, most of the hippogriffs turned to face the proto-dragons. The scouts readied their bows. One fortunate scout got off a shot that swiftly dealt with the orc astride one proto-dragon. The dead warrior tumbled off the side of his mount and dropped like a rock toward Ashenvale. Two proto-dragons caught a hippogriff between them. The hippogriff slashed with his talons, raking the snout of the nearest proto-dragon. The orc rider tried to aim his own bow, but the wound made his shot go wide. The hippogriff's rider fired back with success equal to the previous scout, sending another horde corpse falling to the ground. Unfortunately, in focusing on the one proto-dragon, the hippogriff by necessity had to pay little attention to the other. The scout tried to knock another arrow in order to deal with the second, but in the process left herself open to the axe of that proto-dragon's rider. The orc struck hard, the axe blade crushing through armor, flesh, and bone. With a cry, the scout clutched the bleeding stump of an arm. The night elf was put out of her misery by a second swing of the blade, leaving the hippogriff to fend for himself while still bearing the dead rider. The brave creature managed another good swipe, this time at the underbelly of the second proto-dragon. The beast let out a pained roar and tilted to the side. The orc tried to cling on, but with one hand still gripping the axe, he could not. What saved him was the first proto-dragon, which appeared as if by silent command under the dropping orc. Grabbing hold, the orc repositioned himself on his new mount. Both the badly injured proto-dragon and its comrade closed on the hippogriff. Fangs tore into a wing. Claws ripped at a neck. The hippogriff made one last lunge at the most wounded of his adversaries. He tore into the throat of the proto-dragon. The proto-dragon planted its nails on one of the hippogriff's wings. So entangled, both plummeted to their doom. In an attempt to see their mission to fruition, two of the hippogriffs attempted to flee west. One did not make it far, and although the scout tried to aid by firing at their pursuers, a proto-dragon managed to cut the creature off. Unlike in the previous struggle, the hippogriff and night elf were unable to put up much of a defense before both were ripped to shreds by the combination of teeth, nails, and axes. The full aerial combat quickly began to shrink as the trapped defenders fell one after another. Two more proto-dragons perished, as did their orcs, but soon there were only the one scout and hippogriff still seeking to outrace the two mounted proto-dragons, slowly but surely closing. The trap had been set well, and Haldrissa felt personally responsible for each death she witnessed. Worse, there was nothing she could do but watch as the last was trapped. The scout and his hippogriff fought as valiantly as their comrades, even bringing down one of the other proto-dragons and its rider. But in the end, they too fell. The entire struggle had taken place over perhaps 4 minutes, though to Haldrissa it had seemed a horrific eternity. The sentinels had not simply stood by as this all happened. Lancers astride nightsabers readied to lead the charge out the gates. Sentinels on foot held their glaives steady. Archers held off their fire, now awaiting the word that the horde was finally attacking in earnest. The guards on the walls cautiously peered through carved gaps, waiting for the first rush of orcs. But nothing happened. Chapter 13. Gerard's Hunt. Although Velen's arrival had not been expected, there was no question as to his staying as an honored guest, just like the rest of those representing the Alliance. However, the Prophet was not one who desired much in the way of accommodations, and insisted on a simple chamber. Tyrande saw that he received one that still faced him toward the temple proper. The tranquility of the temple gardens appealed to Velen, and so the present moment found him meditating there. The Draenei sat with legs crossed, facing the center of the gardens, his concentration on the light. The two honor guards the High Priestess had assigned to him, he had requested to stay behind at his quarters, their presence surely not needed in this of all places. He suddenly sensed the presence of someone else approaching him. Someone who also had a tremendous affinity for the light. It could be only one person. Without looking, Velen quietly said, "Welcome, Anduin Rin." The human did not seem at all surprised that Velen sensed him, a further sign that the light was very strong with King Varian's son.
"Hello, Prophet. I'm sorry if I disturb you. Please. The title is one given to me by others. I prefer simply Velen."
The Draenei smoothly rose.
"Your father does not know you are here."
"No. He thinks I'm asleep."
Anduin could not hide his guilt.
"It is not for me to judge whether you should have stayed in your quarters or not. That is for you to decide."
This statement seemed to put Anduin at ease a bit.
"I'm old enough to make my own choices, despite what my father thinks. I love him, but he fears so much to lose me again, or to lose me forever as he did Mother, that he nearly smothers me. I can never be out of his sight for more than a few minutes.
One can understand his concern, and your difficulty with it as well.
Prof. Felon, you know why I've come here.
You wish to speak more of the light. I am happy to tell you what I know. If you respect that I will not seek to guide you from your father. Anduin nodded, at that moment looking to Velen much like the king.
I wouldn't ask it. I only want to learn more.
He put a hand to his heart.
I feel the light here. I feel it more every day. It's as much a part of me as anything else is.
Yes. It is extremely strong where you are concerned. Velen glanced around the gardens, but there was no one else about. We can talk for a time, if you like, so long as you promise me you will return to your quarters afterward. The gratitude with which the youth radiated was almost as strong as the light within.
I promise.
As they walked, Velen studied the boy closely. Yes, I must teach him all I know, if that is possible. This one has a destiny with the light. Velen ever remained aware of just who walked with him. Anduin was heir to Stormwind, and the Draenei knew how important Stormwind was to this troubled world just now. The Alliance needed Stormwind, perhaps more than even its king realized. Anything that threatened the stability of Stormwind threatened the long-term stability of the Alliance, especially in the face of a resurgent horde. Yet, if the Light had other plans for Anduin Rin...
You must move on,
Gerard heard his wife's voice murmur to him. It was not the first time since coming here that he had heard it. And while some might have thought that they were going mad, Gerard accepted it as her simply still watching out for him, as she always had in life. He had already departed his quarters some time ago in the hopes of trying to regain some focus. Even though he would continue to mourn Shalasir, perhaps for the rest of his life, he knew that she would have expected him to do more than that. As much as Gerard hated the thought, Shalasir would have wanted him to fit himself back into Night Elf society, find some other purpose. Yet what that purpose might be, he did not know, and in truth did not completely care. Still, Gerard knew that he had to try. There was no question about returning to the military. In part, that had to do with dealing with Chandris, something he was not prepared to do for the time being. If ever. However, it also had to do with Gerard's lingering feelings concerning how he saw Night Elf society. There were hints that things had changed, that Malfurion and Tyranda had begun bringing the various segments of their people closer again. But he needed to see more. The war had left too much of a mark on him. I apparently am beginning to grow old. Gerard hoped that he would not become as he had seen some of the elder Night Elves he had witnessed just after the war's end. Their entire world turned upside down by the struggle against the Burning Legion and the destruction of Xin Ashari. They had been unable to cope with their new, unpredictable future. Several had slipped into fantasy worlds of their own that consisted of safe memories of the past. Many of those had never found their way back to reality. But for Shalasir's sake alone, Gerard was determined to live. Forcing himself to leave his quarters and start walking among his own kind were the first steps. He had even made it a point to keep an eye out for anyone he remembered, and be sure to greet them. That had caused a few startled expressions, but Gerard had felt that his wife would have been proud of his initial effort. Still, he was more than happy to finally head back. In fact, the closer he got, the more he picked up his pace, eager to return to what had become his sanctuary. And thus it was that Gerard nearly fell atop the body in his path. He saved himself from doing so at the last minute by grabbing hold of one of the last trees within reach. Even still, the former guard captain dropped down on one knee upon the arm of the corpse. The years since the war melted away as Gerard reacted like a soldier once again. Pressing against the tree, he peered around for the assassin. Seeing no one, Gerard cautiously bent low to investigate the grisly find. At first he wondered if perhaps he was losing himself in old memories. He had not seen such a figure since the war. That Gerard had not even noticed the brightly colored garment bespoke just how deep he had been in his reverie.
A highborn.
Belatedly it returned to him that they had come seeking readmittance to Night Elf society. With the exception of his accidental leaning on the arm, Gerard was careful not to touch the body. It was already evident what had likely proven the spellcaster's end. The two jagged slits in his throat indicated a large dagger wielded by an enthusiastic hand. There was also something pinned by a rock to the dead mage's chest. Questions filled Gerard's head, some of them very disturbing. One that particularly vexed him from the start was why the Highborn should be here in the first place. What business had the spellcaster had so near where Gerard lived? The answer came to him as he studied the ground nearby. Someone had been careful to remove any footsteps, and he knew why. The Highborn had been slain elsewhere, and then dragged to this spot. Despite the efforts to cover that fact up, there were still some tiny telltale spots of what could only be blood. They led toward the east for a few paces before ceasing. From all this, Gerard decided that the reason that the Highborn had been found by him was simply that the assassins had not wanted the victim to be discovered near the place of his demise. Something there would have possibly given searchers a clue to the truth. It occurred to him suddenly that this was not his task. By rights, he had to report this to the sentinels, or, more to his preference, the arch-druid or high priestess. Gerard looked around again, saw no one, and decided to risk leaving the body alone while he searched for someone with authority. Being a druid, Malfurion was likely somewhere beyond Darnassus, so Gerard headed toward the temple. At the very least, he believed Tyranda would be there, and if it turned out the arch-druid also was, so much the better.
Gerard?
He stopped at the sound of Chandris's voice. Flanked by four sentinels, she too headed toward the temple.
Shan... General, he responded, trying to regain his composure.
After her initial outburst of his name, she too sought to bring things to a more detached level.
Gerard, you have business with the High Priestess.
It took but a moment's debate before he admitted the truth.
Yes. Someone has been murdered.
Her guards immediately tensed. Chandris signaled them to calm down, though her eyes burned at the revelation.
Where? Who?
I found the body near my quarters. He gave her a more precise location. It was one of the Highborn. I do not know him. There was some note under him, but I did not touch it.
A Highborn?
Chandris looked at the guard nearest her left.
Send word to Maya of Shadowsong.
She hesitated a moment as she noted Gerard's reaction to his sister's name.
With the details you just heard.
To the guard next to that one, she continued,
Take Ildiri and hurry to where he said the body was located. Keep guard over it until Maiev or her people arrive.
The other sentinels rushed to obey, leaving Chandris with just the one guard. The general bade Gerard join her, the other sentinel following them. The guards did not hesitate to let Chandris pass. She strode unerringly through the temple to where they found Tyranda. The High Priestess greeted them with a knowing expression.
There has been a death.
Chandris went down on one knee, the other sentinel and Gerard doing the same.
Another Highborn.
Tyranda bade them to rise.
You found the body, Gerard?
He realized that she had read the fact in his urgent manner.
Yes.
not far from my quarters. I judged that the body had been moved from elsewhere after the murder. I assume to hide facts about the true location.
That seems logical to me, Chandris added.
I have sent someone to inform Maiev, and others to guard the body until she or the Highborn do something with it.
And we shall do something. Not only now with Husrim's body, but also with these curs who think the Highborn will stand by and be slain without repercussion.
Malfurion and a Highborn had entered the chamber from another direction. Gerard understood that this was someone high among the Magi, though he doubted it was the leader. That was verified by Tyrande's reply.
Do you speak in the name of Archmage Morden now, Varden?
I presage his words, High Priestess. Patient though he is, the Archmage will not let this stand. This lack of progress has been discussed among the Highborn. We would hate to have to make these crimes more public, especially with the emissaries now present for your summit, but we will do so if necessary. Perhaps then something will be done about the murders.
He glared at all in the room, finally fixing his blazing eyes upon Gerard.
You! You are the one who claims to have found the body, are you not? I am curious how you happened to be near.
I do not claim to have found it. I did. A rare fury stirred in the former guard captain. And if you are considering me as the possible assassin, you will find yourself sorely mistaken. Malfurion raised his staff between the pair. I am certain that Varden is not making any unwarranted accusations, Gerard. We are all struggling to come to grips with this foul matter. I am sure Varden joins me in commending you for immediately alerting us to this second murder. The mage hesitated, then replied, Yes.
Of course. Thank you, Gerard Shadowsong.
It surprised Gerard that Varden knew who he was, especially considering his threatening posture a moment before. He nodded to the mage, but said nothing.
All is being done to find the perpetrators, Varden, the High Priestess assured. Maiev is dedicated to the truth, and nothing will stand in her way.
She has a coarse way about her, but I have spoken with this one's sister and find her, as you say, the Highborn admitted. However, she is one, where these assassins could be many. Darnassus is surely riddled with those plotting against the return of the Highborn, and we will not stand idly by any longer.
At that point, Varden gave Tyrande and Malfurion a fleeting bow, then turned on his heel and marched off. Gerard could not tell whether he had been satisfied by the High Priestess's promises, or he merely knew that he could do nothing without this Archmage Morden's permission.
Amazing that anyone should dislike the Highborn, Chandris remarked under her breath. They are the epitome of respect and congeniality.
Gerard made no response, although he was aware that she had spoken so that he was the only other one who would hear. Both Malfurion and Tyrande turned their attention to him. Gerard suddenly felt uneasy. He was certain that the pair desired something of him.
Gerard,
I want to again express our appreciation of your handling of the vile discovery, Tyrande said. I did, as should be done.
Not everyone would have behaved the same way. Your training and common sense shone through.
She glanced at her husband, who nodded back.
Varden is correct in one thing. Maiev will need some assistance. We cannot afford for this to continue, not only for the Highborn's sake, but also for everything we are trying to accomplish with this summit.
My sister is very competent and very determined. I cannot think of anyone more suited for the task. Tyrande smiled.
Perhaps. But her brother would certainly be an asset to the search.
Even though he had seen the suggestion coming, Gerard did not know how to answer. If the High Priestess... if you think this a necessary duty.
It is a request, Gerard. No command. You can refuse, and we will understand perfectly.
He knew that she truly meant that, but hearing her say so proved the impetus to his decision. I will do my part, though I will bow to Maiev's authority on this.
Of course. Tyrande looked grateful.
The Archdruid also showed his pleasure. Your support will be invaluable, Gerard. We need everyone right now.
I will do all I can.
And the first thing I need to do is find my sister and explain this. The High Priestess shook her head.
I will inform her.
With all due respect, I would like to tell her myself. It would be more appropriate in this case.
As you wish, then.
Gerard bowed to both. Chandris did the same and joined him as he departed. The general sent the sentinel accompanying them on to other duties.
I am very glad to have you a part of this,
she said quietly once the pair was alone.
Your sister is very dedicated, but often her focus is a bit too narrow.
I know Maiev has faults, but I have as many, if not more. We will do all we can to stop these assassinations.
Let us hope so.
I am no admirer of the Highborn, but I can see how they might grow restive as their members are cut down. Darnassus, the Night Elf race in general, can ill afford a conflict between them and everyone else. He stopped. You have dealt with my sister. Where would I most likely find her at this point? Where I left the body. Chandris took the unspoken farewell without a beat. She pointed.
No. By this point,
she and her watchers are probably moving it for better study. I would say your best bet is to meet her there instead.
And where is that? The place where she and her watchers train. I know that she organized and conducted her investigation of the first murder from there.
Thank you. He dared not say anything more, though her eyes showed that she waited for him to do so. Steeling himself, Gerard bowed to her and headed in the direction she had indicated. As he journeyed, Gerard drew the dagger sheathed at his side. He probably did not need it, but then two people had been slain. That they had been highborn did not rule out that the perpetrators might not kill someone interfering with their plans. The sounds of Darnassus muted abruptly as he neared the location Chandris had suggested. The dark mood of his surroundings fit well with how he saw his sister. She had always been the driven one, while he had simply stumbled through life, rising, in his estimation, more by chance than by ability. Still, Gerard hoped that Maiev would see his value in this mission. The practice area used by his sister and her followers appeared empty. The crudely drawn expressions on the row of wooden practice dummies seemed to mock his failure to find Maiev. False swords raised high and chipped shields ever at the ready, even as savagely hacked as they were, they looked at the moment far more capable than Gerard felt. The male night elf looked around, pondering where to go next if Maiev did not show up soon. He considered the fact that she might have gone to the Highborn encampment, but ruled that out as reckless, even by his sister's standards. Frustrated at not finding Maiev here, Gerard turned and stared directly into the eyes of what could only be one of his sister's watchers. She wore armor akin to Maiev's, but of a slightly duller shade. Her helmet hung from a branch just to her left, as if the watcher had just taken it off. Propped against the trunk of the same tree was her Umbra Crescent.
You are he, the younger night elf stated without preamble. You are her brother.
She eyed him critically.
I expected you to be taller and more scarred from all those battles.
Her comment made him wonder just what Maiev had said about him over the millennia.
Had he so disappointed her that she had been forced to make him more in the image of what he should have been? When Gerard did not respond, the watcher added, I am never. She started walking, her movements as smooth as those of a nightsaber. Gerard felt as if she were sizing up prey. Neva circled him, taking in every aspect of Maiev's brother.
No, you are as you should be. Like her.
Not certain how to take that, he asked. Where is Maiev? I need to speak with her.
She was here not long ago.
But no sooner did they bring the body of that spellcaster than some of his kind showed up to take it away. Maiev was not too pleased.
She was not done with it.
Neva might as well have been talking about a chair or some other insignificant object. Gerard sighed. So she is at their encampment?
Very possibly.
Neva sauntered to his side, then leaned uncomfortably close.
You can wait here with me.
She will be back very soon. I am certain.
Gerard suddenly pushed past Neva, but not because of her. Rather, something watched both from beyond the area. Something that did not remind him of a night elf. He heard Neva speak, but her words were lost as he threw himself after the spying figure. Whoever it was moved swiftly and surely between the trees. He remembered what had been mentioned about the Worgen, whom he had yet to meet. This would not be the first time they had lurked around the area during troubling times. Gerard tore through the forest, moving automatically. He was certain that he was on the path the figure had gone. All he had to do was keep to the right behind the next tree. His body was racked by agonizing pain, and he felt as if 100 bolts of lightning had struck him simultaneously. Gerard shrieked and felt no disgrace in doing so. No one could suffer such torture and not react as he did. He tumbled forward, or tried. Falling to the ground in some ways would have seemed at least a little relief. Gerard had the great desire to curl up in a ball and pray that the continuous shock would cease, but some force prevented him. It was as if a web held him in place to ensure that his suffering continued unabated. Gerard tried to tear his arms free. If it had allowed him to escape, he would have at that moment gladly given up those arms. Anything to escape. The hope for death began to stir within him, but then Shalasir's face appeared in his thoughts. She had always enjoyed life, even under the most primitive of circumstances. Gerard, who had never been able to forget the horrors of the War of the Ancients, had learned from her. She had drawn him back to the world in a way nothing else could. And he knew that she wanted him to live, wanted him to go on. Not follow her unless there was no other alternative. Feeling her love again gave Gerard new strength. The torture continued, but now he had something upon which to cling. With Shalasir, there had always been hope. The unremitting shock ceased. Gerard crumpled to the grassy earth at last. He welcomed the collision with the soft soil. The rattling of his bones far less painful than what he had been through. The cool surface felt good against his skin. A hand gripped his left arm. The touch was initially enough to resurrect some traces of the monstrous pain. Gerard cringed, fearing the full force of it would return. But although the fingers held tight, the pain receded again, becoming nothing but memory.
"Can you understand me?"
asked an unfamiliar male voice.
"Can you?"
The former guard captain managed a croaking sound that the other apparently took as an affirmative. The figure moved Gerard to the side, finally resting him against a tree.
"I'm sorry,"
his rescuer whispered.
"I didn't know that would happen. I didn't realize that it was there."
Gerard managed another croak. His vision was still clouded by tears. His companion could have been invisible for all he was able to make out of him. He felt the hands stiffen as an unidentifiable sound in the distance reached them.
Gerard's rescuer suddenly released him. The Night Elf did not hear the other depart, but felt certain somehow that such was the case.
Gerard's breathing returned to near normal. His vision remained teary, but shapes began to coalesce. Vaguely, Gerard finally registered that he had been caught in some insidious trap. So close to where Maiev and her watchers met, he thought it was possible that it had been set by the assassins to catch one of them. After all, his sister was in charge of the investigation. Barely a minute had passed when light footsteps alerted him to someone's approach. Gerard did not think it his rescuer, and when he heard the intake of breath, a sign of the newcomer's apparent astonishment at discovering him, he knew it to be female. The former captain could only assume it was Neva, who had finally managed to follow his trail.
"You live," he heard the watcher say.
"Of course he does," responded another, stronger female voice that made Gerard look up. He saw a vague shape standing over him. "He is my brother, after all."
Chapter 14. The Worgen. More resembling a ghostly fleet worthy of the undead Forsaken, the 8 remaining Horde ships at last reached Bilgewater Harbor, located off of Azshara, which lay east of Greater Ashenvale. Captain Brilne wasted no time disembarking once the goblins who ran the port had set everything in place. He had delivered what he could of his cargo and now was happy to be rid of it, even if that also meant that he would have to face the war chief over his failure. Since his last visit here, the port had been built up considerably, and now covered the entire small island. The main keep rose high above the other structures, and a thriving population, mostly goblins, scurried about as they dealt with not only the docking ships, but also countless other Horde-related activities. At one of the other docks, a crane ending in a large hook lowered supplies into a warship. A goblin operating a foul-smelling mechanism used for unloading cargo trundled by in the distance. As deadly as the shredders could be when turned on a foe, they paled in comparison to the natural fury of Brilne's cargo. The first of the huge hold doors opened, and the crews began unloading the covered cages. None of those who had been part of the journey looked like the orcs that they had once been. Everyone was drawn, anxious. From the docks there came some sniggering from a pair of goblins watching the activities. Growling, Brilne turned on the short, wiry figures, towering over them.
"The war chief's pets are hungry after this journey. They could use a snack, or two."
As the goblins fell silent, he added,
"Now you can either help your lot take over control of the cages, or you can be part of what I feed them."
With great swallows and suddenly polite demeanors, the two goblins saluted the captain and hurried to obey. Brilne allowed himself a short chuckle before the seriousness of his own situation again arose to the forefront. He was more likely than the goblins to become food for the cargo. He suddenly noticed a flurry of movement from the mainland. A fair-sized party was approaching by boat, one that included at least half a dozen capable guards who could only be part of the war chief's famed Corcrum.
"Garrosh," he whispered.
Not for a moment did Brilne think of seeking to avoid the encounter. His honor meant more than his life, and he would not be branded a coward in the last moments of it. The crews and the dock workers already had all but two of the cages settled in an open area reserved just for their arrival. Brilne was proud of those who had served under him during the epic journey. He would commend them all before his execution. Dust and bits of leaves decorated Garrosh and his retinue, a sign that they themselves had also but recently arrived in Azshara. The war chief had an expectant look on his face,
but whether that boded good or ill for the captain, Brilm could not say, and thus he did not raise his hopes. Orcs and goblins slapped their right fists to the left sides of their chests as the horde leader passed. Garrosh did not demand such signs of fealty, but was the